Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Felons and Firearms Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On February 24, 2015, the Supreme Court heard oral argument in Henderson v. the United States. The question in this case is whether under Rule 41G of the Federal Rules of Criminal Procedure or under general principles of equity, the court can order the government to either transfer firearms owned by a convicted felon to a third party, or sell the firearms and return the proceeds to the defendant, or whether the defendant's felony conviction, which renders the defendant legally unable to own firearms, prevents this. To discuss the case, we have Professor David Post, who is a professor of law at the Temple University Beasley School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Post.
So, Henderson versus United States, the federal felon in possession statute, which is at 18 U.S.C. 922, states that convicted felons cannot, quote, possess, unquote, firearms or ammunition. And Henderson v. United States hinges entirely on the meaning of that word, possess. The facts in the case are pretty simple. In 2006, Tony Henderson, a federal border control agent in Florida, was arrested and charged with several counts of distributing marijuana. At his bail hearing, magistrate ordered that he surrender all of the firearms in his possession immediately as a condition of his release on bail, and he did so. In particular, he turned in his collection of 19 guns to the FBI. Henderson subsequently pled guilty to a charge of distributing marijuana, a felony, and he was sentenced to 6 months of imprisonment and 2 years of supervised release. After his conviction, Henderson contacted the FBI seeking to have it transfer his entire firearms collection to a friend, Mr. Rozier, to whom Henderson said he had sold it for a not inconsiderable sum of money, as it happened, several thousand dollars. Or at least, if not to Mr. Rozier, to Henderson's wife, who would presumably then transfer it to Rozier in exchange for the money. Henderson didn't deny the applicability of the felon in possession statute. He acknowledged that he couldn't possess the firearms, but his request was, in effect, I'm not trying to possess the firearms, I'm trying to transfer ownership of them. And the statute only prohibits my possession, not my transfer. I still own the guns, so the government, which doesn't own the guns, at least hasn't instituted any formal forfeiture proceedings against them, the government should transfer them at my direction and for my account. The FBI rejected the request, the district court upheld the rejection, and the 11th Circuit affirmed the district court's rejection. Their reasoning, in a nutshell, was this. It's true that the felon in possession statute only prohibits possession, quote unquote, of firearms. But when Congress used the word possession, it meant both actual and constructive possession. And under the common law doctrine of constructive possession, any exercise of dominion or control over the guns constitutes constructive possession. And therefore, it falls within the prohibition of the statute. Transferring the guns at Henderson's direction allows him to exercise dominion and control over them. That constitutes constructive possession, and it's therefore prohibited. So this is the smallest statutory construction case imaginable, in a sense. I mean, it hinges entirely on the meaning of that single word, possession. The 11th Circuit's reading is fairly constricted and strained, in my opinion, and more importantly, in the opinion of the other courts of appeals that had considered the question. Those courts either were not persuaded that the statute covered constructive possession at all, or that if it did, constructive possession shouldn't be read to completely extinguish the felon's right to transfer the property. And they held that some kinds of transfers, at least, for instance, a transfer to a trustee for the felon's account, or a transfer to unrelated third parties, or to gun dealers. They held that those didn't involve constructive possession and were therefore permitted. But what makes this case interesting, this little statutory construction case? Why does it matter whether the word possession in this statute covers constructive possession or not, and what constructive possession might constitute? The case attracted some attention from folks who are interested in the Second Amendment and firearm ownership, but I don't think really that it has anything much to say about those issues. That is, in my opinion, this case could just as well be about the transfers of furniture or automobiles. And I would be very surprised if the Supreme Court had anything at all to say about firearms and the right to firearms as part of its disposition. None of the other courts involved in this issue had done so. What I do think was interesting, though, was this. Under the 11th Circuit's reading of the statute, there had been a kind of de facto forfeiture of Henderson's entire ownership interest in the firearms, even though the statute only expressly prohibited possession. He couldn't use the guns. He couldn't possess the guns. Everybody acknowledged that. But if he also couldn't transfer the guns, then what, in fact, was left of his ownership interest in them? It looked like there was nothing left. And if there was nothing left, that's the equivalent of a forfeiture. So Rob Johnson of the Institute for Justice and I authored an amicus brief submitted on the Institute for Justice's behalf, urging the court to reject the 11th Circuit's reading of the statute by articulating and reaffirming an important principle of statutory construction, that property forfeitures are disfavored, that they shouldn't be implied from ambiguous statutory language, and that if a statute like this one does not explicitly call for a forfeiture remedy, courts should favor reasonable readings of the statute that do not impose the forfeiture remedy over those readings that do. And as other courts of appeals have already demonstrated, there are plenty of ways to construe this statute reasonably so as to allow property transfers and to avoid the forfeiture remedy, and the court should adopt that position. And this is all interesting and, we think, at least important because, as most of you probably know, there's been an epidemic of civil asset forfeiture in this country over the past couple of decades, starting with the war on drugs in the 1980s. And this case seemed to present some opportunity for the Supreme Court to weigh in on that. There's a wonderful old case that we cited at length with the poetic caption of United States versus one 1936 Model Ford V8 Deluxe Coach, what we call the one Ford coach opinion, that was decided during an earlier wave of forfeiture activity in this country, one that stemmed from prohibition and the widespread governmental seizures of automobiles in particular that had been used to transport liquor. And in the one Ford coach case, the Supreme Court articulated, we argued at least, a canon of statutory construction, that the law should be interpreted to avoid forfeitures whenever such an interpretation is reasonable. And so we urge the court here, in the Henderson case, to reassert that principle as a means of perhaps slowing down, if not completely eliminating, this current wave of forfeiture madness. Now, there's one important additional wrinkle to all this. In its brief that was ostensibly defending the 11th Circuit's decision below, the Solicitor General, speaking for the government, largely abandoned that decision. The statute, the Solicitor General now argued, does indeed cover constructive possession, but the government now acknowledged that not all transfers to a willing buyer at the felon's direction constitute constructive possession. For instance, the Solicitor General's brief acknowledged that a transfer to a federally licensed firearms dealer for sale for the felon's account is not prohibited by the statute, though perhaps a direct transfer to Henderson's wife or to Mr. Rozier could be prohibited if that was some sort of a sham transaction and Henderson was really going to end up with possession. In other words, everyone now agrees, in effect, that the felon in possession statute should not be read to work de facto forfeitures. It does not eliminate the felon's ownership right to transfer his or her property to third persons, the way the 11th Circuit opinion appeared to eliminate that right. So that's surely good news for Mr. Henderson. His firearms can be sold. He can receive the proceeds of the sale. It's also more or less the position we took in our amicus brief, so I guess we should be pleased as well. Indeed, I suppose we can fantasize that the government was so taken by the force of our arguments that it had no choice but to concede the point, though, to be candid, I doubt that that's what actually happened. But the government's concession, we should be pleased, but the government concession on this point is not quite as good from our perspective as a Supreme Court pronouncement could be, less long-lasting and less authoritative. And now that the government has indeed conceded the point, it's not clear that the court will feel the need to elaborate on it. The concession does take almost all of the wind out of the sails of this case, and it gave oral argument a bit of a surreal quality. The very first question for Daniel Ortiz, Henderson's attorney, who, by the way, I thought did a terrific job on Henderson's behalf, that argument, the first question was from the Chief Justice, who asked, is your client satisfied with the remedy that the government now says is within the statute, that is a transfer to a federally licensed firearms dealer for sale for Henderson's account? And Ortiz answered, yes, he is satisfied. Mr. Henderson thinks he's entitled to a direct transfer to Mr. Rozier, for that matter, and he would prefer that, which is why the case isn't rendered entirely moot by the government's concession. There's still a lingering dispute between the parties. But he's perfectly satisfied with the sale conducted by a licensed gun dealer. The questioning for Ann O'Donnell from the Solicitor General's office was considerably more withering. She was in a tough spot. Was the government's position still that the statute prohibited constructive possession? Her answer, yes, it was. But a transfer conducted by a federally licensed gun dealer does not constitute constructive possession? And her answer to that was, that's correct. It does not constitute constructive possession. Question, why not? Why is that not constructive possession when the transfer to Mr. Rozier would be constructive possession? And she did not really have a good answer for that one to my ears or, I think, to the court's. What about if it's not a federally licensed gun dealer? What if the dealer just ended up selling it right back to Mr. Rozier? Would that make it constructive possession by Henderson? If so, the why? And if not, why not just let him transfer it directly to Rozier? The court seemed pretty unhappy with having to travel down this road of constructive possession and the ancient common law meanings of the term. Justice Breyer, I think, summed up what appeared to be the court's view. And he said, when somebody uses the word constructive X, that just means it's not X, and it's a way of pretending that it is X when it isn't. So this is a very rare case in which there's really no doubt whatsoever about the outcome. Henderson wins. The only remaining question really is how the court, which I predict will be unanimous, explains the outcome. This case has all the makings of a simple one-paragraph per curiam opinion. The parties have agreed that the statute does not cover a transfer at the felon's request and for the felon's account effected by means of a sale by a federally licensed gun dealer. It is so ordered. Full stop. On the other hand, the fact that nothing has come out thus far might mean that the court is not going the simple per curiam route. and that the court is going to try to explain what the statute actually does mean, whether it covers constructive possession or not, and what that might mean. And it might even explain why it is rejecting, along with everyone else, the 11th Circuit no transfers allowed interpretation. Time, I suppose, will tell.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. For more episodes of SCOTUSCast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.